Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello and welcome to the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I am so excited that you are here with me today. If this is your first time joining the show, thank you so much. Welcome. I know that you're going to love what you hear. If you've been with me for a while, thank you as well. I love doing this show, and as you know, I love interacting with you. So maybe it's because today is the day after Thanksgiving. As long as you're hearing this, the day it goes up. I'm just full of gratitude. One of the things I'm really grateful for is modern technology. I mean, I am traveling, visiting family. I don't have my normal setup, but here we are still able to record and put out podcasts and really just keep the show going as normal. You know, that's been really cool. One thing I'm not thankful for, bugs. Let me tell you that. I probably unwisely went out for a run like the day after I got here to Tennessee. And so the weather change is much colder here than it is in California. Shocker. Plus just, you know, going out for that run and being different, I think has hit me pretty hard. And I'm over here fighting a bug, trying to not sound like a frog. So that's, it's that time of year, I guess. You know, places with weather, stuff like this happens. So it's got to soldier on, right? Anyway, so thank you so much for bearing with me and my croaky, lower than optimal voice and setup. And I really hope that you find value in the show, regardless of the slight step down in production value that I normally like to put out. On the topic of gratitude, I want to give a huge thank you to the patrons. Thank you so much for supporting the show directly. Over at mtgprotutor.com/Patreon, you can go to pledge any amount you want per episode. You can also set a monthly limit so you never go out of budget. And I'm going to be restructuring the goals and stuff like that. So when that's done, I'll make an announcement and you can go and check out what we have going on over there. And since I've been traveling, I haven't been able to put the focus that I want to into the Level Up Your Magic the Gathering Skills 2.0, which is still coming. Like I said, the content is all done. I just got to put it all together and release that to you guys. It's a course that has contributions from past guests and pro Magic the Gathering players to help you take your game to the next level. Topics about deck building, post-game evaluation, combat, limited, and it's just a great resource to really improve your skill. So like I said, that is coming. The content is done. I just need to find the time to put it all together. So stay tuned. If you want to be on the list, knowing exactly when it's going to go up, you can go to mtgprotutor.com/level up, and there should be a little sign up right there for you. We are still here in between the World Magic Cup, where I want to congratulate Greece again. And this weekend, we have Grand Prix Chiba. So I'll be reaching out to all these players, inviting them onto the show, and I really hope to have some international perspectives for you coming very soon. Speaking of episodes coming up, because of the travel and the holidays, there may be a couple throwback episodes, some best ofs. I'm going to dig into the archives, some episodes from back in the day that maybe some of the newer listeners haven't heard yet, and I'll be reposting those. And that'll be a first for the show. I've never done that before. I always felt like, oh, I'm just going to keep producing new content, and that's just going to be what I do. But from listening to other shows and learning from other podcasters, you know, there are some really good episodes back in the archives that some of the newer listeners haven't heard yet. And I really feel like republishing those and giving them a second chance at light will help spread the word and really help people improve. So there might be a couple of those coming up. I'll try not to do too many of them, but depending on the interview schedule and how long it takes me to get back to some sense of normalcy will determine how many of those I'm able to do. So anyways, thanks so much for tuning in today. I can't wait to bring in our guests and talk about magic. So without further ado, let's do that right now. What's up, everybody? I am super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest has filled his life with many magic-related activities. When he is not playing at Grand Prix, he works at a local magic store, manages content for Blackborder.com, and does some trading of his own. He has top-aided 2 Grand Prix and won 1. Coming to us from Zurich, Switzerland, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Andreas Gantz. Andreas, how are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you, Sean?
Fantastic. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips to take their game to the next level?
Absolutely. I'd love to. Yeah.
Now, all you prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Andreas, he is at Flukemaster on Twitter. But if you can't spell that like most people, that's totally fine because it's crazy. You can also find him on Facebook, which is probably a better place to reach out to him. Say thanks for being on the show. Ask him questions. He knows a lot about magic, and we're about to dive into that. So, Andreas, I'm super, super pumped, like I said, to have you here. And we would love to learn a little bit about, you know, you before we dive in. So, first of all, are you born and raised in Switzerland? Is that where you're from?
That's where I'm born and raised. Yeah, I've lived there my whole life. Well, I've moved around a little within the country, but I've been born in Switzerland. Yeah,
excellent. So your family's still there? You have a big family, small family?
I've a younger brother. He's 2 years younger than me, and he lives in Zurich as well. My family lives in Switzerland, but they live a bit farther away, like more in the middle of the country. It's not that big. It's not the huge country, so it's still like a 3 hour train ride away.
Okay, excellent.
They all still live there.
Yeah. Oh man, I love it. I love it. 3 hour train ride because you guys use trains out there, which is totally cool. And I wish we used more trains over here, but that's awesome. Does your brother play Magic?
Well, not anymore. He played Magic in the beginning when we both started. When we both picked up the game, we played against each other quite a bit, but he was never as competitive as I was. And well, he came to Friday Night Magic a couple of times. And then he just, the game just, he just faded out of the game. Yeah. But he still knows about it. Occasionally he would check out some of the new cards, but he doesn't really play actively anymore.
Okay. Yeah. And we mentioned some of the things that you do other than, you know, playing competitively. Is that kind of what you do for work? You work at the local Magic store and you manage content for Black Border?
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I do. I do some content management. I work at the store. I trade. I do some trading of my own. You know, when I travel to the GPs, I just trade with people. Yeah, so lots of Magic.
Oh man, well that is so cool. You're out there, you know, doing what we want to do, going to Grand Prix and doing well at them, and filling your life with Magic related activities. So that's super sweet. So we want to dive into your story, and we want to use stories to bridge the gap between where we are and where you are. And the first story we want to hear is your origin story, pretty much. We want you to take us back to the beginning and tell us the story of the very first time that you ever saw or played with Magic cards.
Right. I think that was around 1995, maybe 1994, in school. Some people in my class were playing this weird card game, and I just saw the cards, and I asked them to teach me and how it works, and they did. Yeah, I think it was around Ice Age 4th edition, and then I just went down to the store and bought some packs and just ripped them open. And I remember there was a Sarah Angel as one of the first cards I was really, really excited about that I got in one of the packs. And then I had to build a mono white Angel life gain deck.
Of course, as you would.
To play. It was, the deck size was probably over 100 cards or maybe 100. And I just kept adding cards. I had no idea what I was doing. But I was really enjoying myself. And that's the first time I saw the game. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I got the grip of the game. And I just wanted to play with my buddies at school. Yeah.
That's neat. And I love how Sarah Angel was still all right, but, you know, like the big card back then. I'm like, oh, this is so cool. And
things have changed. Yeah. But I remember vividly being really, really excited about that Angel in one of the packs I got. I thought it was the greatest card ever. Just had to build a deck.
Ice Age was your first set, huh?
I think so, yeah. I remember having lots of cards from Ice Age, so I think it was the first set, 4th edition, maybe Alliances. Somewhere
in there.
Somewhere around that time.
So what's been your favorite set?
Well, that's really difficult to tell. I think I liked Mirrodin quite a bit, but I really liked drafting full block Ravnica, the first Ravnica cycle, Ravnica Guildback Dissension. That's for limited play, that's the one I really, really enjoyed. Yeah, with all the crazy multicolor stuff you could do. I mean, lots of people will say Innistrad probably. I really enjoyed that as well. It's just a really flavorful set. But back then, I think the Ravnica draft was a great, great format. Yeah,
that's where it's at.
It has gotten better since then. Yeah, design wise. Most of the recent blocks for limited play, they've been so much fun. There have been so many different strategies. Yeah, so I remember Ravnica Guildback Dissension the most. That I really, really, really enjoyed it.
Sweet. So if you were a resident of Ravnica, what guild would you belong to?
I think maybe Dimir guild.
All right, Dimir, okay.
I think, yeah, Oh, it's tough. I don't think, no, definitely not Gruul. Yeah, definitely not Gruul stuff. Definitely not Selesnya. not really into attacking. I like more like the crazy
okay.
the crazy stuff. Like is it mages too, you know? Yeah. I really enjoyed Izzet. Yeah, Izzet sounds fun, like spells and rebuying spells. And I'm not really into creature combat, you know, and combat tricks. Yeah, so Izzet the more spell based decks where you can really combo off, do crazy stuff. Yeah.
So let's see, is Grixis your shard then? Is that what you like?
Yeah, I've played Grixis in Modern, so Grixis is one of the shards I really really enjoy playing. I think it might be my shard. The only reason why I asked
is because you mentioned Izzet, which is blue red, and then you mentioned Dimir with his black blue, and they share a color blue.
It must be Grixis, right? Yeah.
I'm just curious because the last time that somebody mentioned two guilds and they overlapped a color, and I threw out the shard, they said, "Oh yeah, that's my guild. You know, that's my shard exactly." So I'm experimenting that if people like two guilds in Ravnica that share a color, that's their shard or their. Or their wedge, and so I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think it must be Grixis. I mean, maybe Esper.
Yeah, Esper's good.
Kind of like the Esper's, what Esper's going on as well. But yeah, awesome. I think Grixis. When I think about the other shards, I don't nearly identify as much with them as with Grixis. Yeah.
Cool. So along the same lines of favorite set, what is one of? Because I know it's hard. One of your favorite cards.
Yeah, that's that's a tough one. That's a tough one. Off the top of my head, I would say Polymorph. Because that's a crazy deck, a crazy card, and I did really well with a polymorph-based deck. I won nationals with it, so that's just what comes to my mind first. I really, really enjoyed the deck.
For those of us who don't know, what is polymorph? What does it do, and why do you like it?
It costs three colorless and the blue, and it's a sorcery, and it lets you target a creature you have in play. And then it gets destroyed. You reveal cards from the top of your deck until you reveal a creature card, and that card you put that card into play. And the other cards are shuffled back into your library. So the idea is that you only have one or two creatures, or just the same creature in your deck that you know you're going to hit off the polymorph. So the creatures you target in play, they aren't actual creature cards; they're tokens usually. So you know what's going to happen when you resolve the polymorph. In the deck I played, you'd always get the Emrakul into play. Yeah,
that's awesome.
And you can use spawn tokens, you know, to target with polymorph, and just anything that's not an actual creature card, then you can put in your deck, and it creates creature tokens for you. That's
so. How come that deck isn't around anymore? Like I haven't really seen it.
Well, that was a standard deck.
Oh, really? So, oh, okay.
That was in standard, but it saw some play in modern. I remember a blue-black polymorph deck, I think, with Bitter Blossom as a token-generating card. A Japanese player played that at the World Championship. Well, the old world, some years ago. Yeah, it saw some play. It wasn't. I mean, it for extended. It was, I think. Sorry about that. Yeah, back then it was extended, I think. And it's just it was fine. It was playable, but maybe not on the same power level as some other decks in the format. And obviously in standard, it's just rotated out. It was fine for standard.
Yeah.
It was also a bit about the surprise effect because people didn't know what was going on and what the deck was capable of. So you can't catch them off guard with a deck like this. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Turn four Emrakul seems pretty rough.
So it's pretty good. It's pretty good. But Chase the Mind Sculptor was in the format as well back then. So Dex had some answers to it. Yeah.
It sounds like the Wild West. It sounds crazy. Absolutely crazy.
It was. But I love the deck. I really enjoyed it. Did well with it. Yeah, it was just a fun little deck. Really, you catch people off guard. People didn't know about the deck and what was going on, so they would tap out, and you can just play your polymorph, get your Emrakul, and then yeah,
sounds good.
See if they can answer it. Usually they can't. Yeah.
So I love that. That's so neat. And you know, here you are working at a Magic store, playing Grand Prix, managing content. So you're obviously heavily involved in Magic. And I want to ask why. Like, what makes Magic fun for you? Why have you stuck around all these years?
I think, well, first of all, I think it's just the greatest or one of the greatest games ever created. And what keeps me around is that the game is constantly evolving. That's just the one thing that keeps it interesting. With all these set, these new sets being released constantly, it just never grows old. It's unlike other games, chess or poker. Eventually I just get bored, and Magic keeps evolving. It just keeps challenging you in new ways. Let's take the recent set, for example. Let's take the energy mechanic or vehicles as a card type. These are just things we've never seen before. And when a set with these new toys is released, it's just so much fun figuring out what you can do with the new cards, how these cards interact, how they interact with old cards, how to correctly assess the power level of these new cards, of energy cards. There's just so much going on, and it just keeps evolving, and it's just like a constant piece of just new puzzles every few months that you need to solve. It's so much fun. Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah, I love how you said that. You know, it's constantly evolving. There's always new pieces, making it a new puzzle to solve. So that's really, really cool.
I think that's the main reason why what keeps me interested in the game. Yeah.
Awesome. Now, when you were improving as a player, and especially when you started being competitive, what is an aspect of Magic that you were terrible at, but that you eventually overcame?
Well, I think at some point, once you start doing well, you might think that you know a lot, that you know everything, that you know how it's supposed to be done. And at some point, I think I had a little bit of this. I thought, well, yeah, now I figured it out. I know how to play constructed, limited, and that just doesn't help with getting better at the game when you just think you've figured it out. And I needed to learn that there's still so much for me to improve at and to learn about the game, and that I'm still, well, I'm still not great at the game. I had to overcome this idea of that I know enough about the game to maybe not have to put as much work into it as I did in the past. And I really had to understand that I keep to, you just need to keep working, keep playing, keep trying to improve at the game. Yeah, I really had to understand that concept.
Tell us that story. Like, when did you realize that? Was there an event or something that happened and you're like, wow, like I don't actually know as much as I do, and I really need to start learning from others or putting in, you know, a little more effort? Like, was there something specific that kind of triggered that?
I think it's really hard to link it to a single event or situation, but definitely when you play against some of the best players, just the great ones, just the best players in the world at some point, or Hall of Famers. And well, I mean, when a great player outplays you, say, or you really, when you're playing the match, you just realize that they're playing so much better than you, that you're still at a disadvantage. You just realize how much better one can play the game. Yeah. And these matches, they showed me that.
That's awesome. Yeah. So when you played against them, you realize how much you have to learn.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not a single
yeah.
event I can link it to, but that's what triggered it. Yeah.
So who are, either past or present, who are some of the pro players that you do look up to, that you admire, that you've learned from?
Right. I think definitely Kai Pude. He's one of the best, and I admire him and what he did in the past. And at the first GP I went to, I had to play against him.
Oh, wow.
And I was scared back then, right? I mean, we still had the Sideboard magazine. That was print magazine, and you would read about these great players. You'd see their decks and the pictures in the Sideboard magazine, and then eventually I got to play against Kai, and I was super nervous, and
wow.
I still remember that vividly.
Who won?
Then I did.
Whoa! I did. That's awesome.
that was crazy.
So yeah. What did that feel like? Yeah, so you know, you're at your first Grand Prix, you're playing against somebody that you've seen their picture in a magazine.
It was crazy. I was shaking. Yeah, let's say you started playing tennis and then you have to play against Roger Federer. Right?
Yeah.
Just the the best player back then. And it was crazy. So many people are watching us, and I was super nervous.
Was it like round four and you just happened to get?
There was round nine. It was the last round playing for day two, you know, to make the cut. And yeah,
oh my gosh.
I'll never forget it. Yeah. Yeah. There are some other great players you just keep facing. I think for limited, I mean, Ben Stark is just really, really good at limited. There's some other players I spent more time. I mean, I've worked with for some time, like a Swiss player, Nico Boni, and he's really, really good at limited. And he's played on the Pro Tour, he's top 8, he's won GPs as well. And I just, I learned a lot from him, especially regarding limited, draft and sealed. And then some former pro player from Australia, Jeremy Niemann, I was really, really impressed whenever I played him or tested with him and worked with him. He was just so good at the game. These are a few of the players I've learned from or I've looked up to.
That's awesome. It's so neat to kind of hear, you know, a little bit about, you know, your journey, kind of interacting with some of these great players, especially that story about Kai. That's awesome. And as we all go through our Magic experiences, we have unique highs and lows, right? So one thing that we all do have is we all have highs, we all have lows, but what those highs and lows are unique to each player. And so we want to dive in to your worst Magic moment and what you learned from that experience. So, you know, take us there, you know, don't pull any punches, but tell us the worst Magic moment you have, but then dive into what you learned from it.
It's hard to have one. There are a few moments I have. I mean, one was when I was playing for a top 8 at the GP, and I made some small mistake that probably cost me the match, or that game and the match.
Which GP?
And Vienna, I believe it was Vienna.
Okay. What happened? Yeah, so just go ahead and tell us that story.
I think I was playing the mono black splash white deck against the mono blue deck, and you had Mutavault, the man land. And for some reason, I was scared of my opponent having the mono blue player having another counter spell in hand. And I decided to somehow chump block with my Mutavault because I was playing scared when I really didn't need to. Because if he had that counter spell, I would. There was no way for me to win. To win the game, so I should have just I shouldn't have played scared and should have just made the other play the right play. Instead, I made the other play and then just ended up losing a few turns later. I think because of it, because I was playing scared. So what I've learned, I mean, even if there's a high pressure situation, and you just have to try and make the right play, obviously, but and don't play scared. It's easier said than done, obviously, but that's what I've learned. Just try to keep cool.
And I like how you pulled out that, you know, you would have lost if he had the counterspell anyways. So playing around it and playing scared, you know, in this particular case, yeah, it didn't make any sense. Lost you the game because you're like, okay, if I make this play and I cast this spell, I win. If he counters it, I lose. If he doesn't counter it, then or if he doesn't have the counter, then he can't, right? And so you're like, oh, but this, that, and the other thing. And so you end up doing a different play. And then, so whether or not he had the counter spell, it didn't even matter because you'd made a different play and you kind of took yourself out of winning. Yeah.
Right. It's also more about playing to win than playing to not lose.
Yes.
Yeah. And I was playing to not lose. I was scared of losing and I should have just played to win in that situation. I didn't, yeah.
Wow. So, I'm glad that you took out a nugget and you're able to share that with us. And on the flip side are our highs and our proud Magic moments. So share with us your proudest Magic moment to date.
That was definitely top baiting my first GP this year. Yeah, that's just... I've always wanted to debate the GP, and I was... earlier this year, I think I was the player with the most pro points that... didn't have the top 8, the GP top 8, so it just felt great. Yes, yeah, I came close so many times and just failed in the last round there and here and there. Yeah, just so many times. So
which Grand Prix was it?
Charlotte. yeah, when I debated there and won it, that felt like a.
Tell us either the round that got you into top eight or one of the top eight matches that you had. So just tell us one of those important stories that happened that day.
Right. Well, the round that got me into top eight, I was playing the combo deck, the Atanasium combo deck, and I felt like it was really well positioned in the metagame. And in my last round, I was playing against a Chess Guy control deck that was really popular back then because of Nahiri. Nahiri was new and the new Planeswalker, and people were picking up on the deck, and my deck was great against the Chess Guy deck. And I faced Chess Guy in the last round playing for possibly top 8. We didn't know because it was a huge event, so depended what was going to happen with your tiebreakers. And I was a game down, if I remember correctly. And that didn't feel great. I lost a super close game one, and the matchup was really, really favorable. So I was getting nervous. I wasn't tilted, but I so wanted that top 8, and there I was facing a good matchup down the game. And eventually I just pulled out another close third game, I believe. At that point, I didn't know I had made the top 8 yet, so I had to wait for the announcement, and I snuck in eighth place, and that was amazing. Yeah,
that's so cool. Out of all the players there are 8 that made it, and you were one of them. That's so cool.
Yeah, huge relief. Yeah, I was so happy. Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah.
So what did that mean for you? Like, how did that feel? Like, what did that mean for you as a player and for your future?
Yeah, just that. Well, I mean, I've played on the Pro Tour for a couple of years. Some time ago, I was, gold level and in the old system, and you had the levels 4 or 5 up until level 8, I think you had. And I was playing on the Pro Tour, but I've never debated the GP. So it was just, I felt relieved that I'd finally done it. It was one of my goals, something I always wanted to achieve. And, some of my friends, they were making fun of me. I mean, in a friendly way, obviously, because of me not getting there and always falling short, but always like in the last rounds of events. And yeah, I had done it. So I was just super, super happy.
Awesome. And then you followed up with a win, right?
I did. Yeah. I just got lucky. I just faced good matchups in that top 8, and it felt really easy winning then. Just I wasn't nervous anymore. I was just so happy, and I really enjoyed playing in the top 8. I just took game by game, and it felt great. Yeah,
awesome. So how many pro points do you have so far?
So far I have 11 this season, and I need one extra pro point to make silver again, and then we'll see where we can take it from there.
Wait, you top 8 at a Grand Prix, and you won a Grand Prix, and you have 11 pro points?
It was in two different seasons. With Pro Tour Sydney, the season ended. So
got
that's
it. Yeah. Okay.
That's why, I mean, for this year, I have 11. Yeah. I mean, this season I have 11 so far with one Pro Tour played, and I'm qualified for the next two Pro Tours.
Okay. Good.
And that gives me more points, more guaranteed points, and I need out of the next few tournaments, I need one extra Pro point to have 20 guaranteed. 20 points guaranteed for the fourth Pro Tour, yeah. So I can probably play all of them.
Yay! Well, that's awesome. That is really, really cool. I love it. Absolutely love it. So going to, let's say, your Grand Prix Charlotte, the first time they made top 8 of that Grand Prix, what did the preparation look like? So you say you're playing ad nauseum. How did you choose that deck? How far out in advance did you start playing? What were you doing to get ready? Lead us up to that event so that we know what it looked like for you. We know it's not like, hey, if you do this, you will win. But like for you, leading up to that event, what did it look like and how are you preparing?
Right. With the deck choice had to do with how I expected the metagame to develop because of the Jeskai deck I mentioned, because of Nahiri. Somebody did well with Nahiri, I think, or people started to figure out how powerful Nahiri was, even in Modern, together with Emrakul. And I just expected there to be a lot of these slower controlling controlling decks that and Eldrazi decks that aren't great against combo decks, and that ultimately led me to pick up the Nazim deck. But it's really hard. Obviously, I have played a lot of Modern over the past couple of years, so I already have some sort of base knowledge about the format that I can draw from and that I can just use to base my decisions on. I think I started just playtesting about maybe 3 weeks before the event, something like that. And just a lot of it is also theorizing about what I expect people to do in Modern. And Modern is such a wide format so that you never really know. You can't face anything at that event. In the end, I felt like Nauseum was well positioned. I've played the deck before.
I was about to ask, had you played at Nauseum before?
Yes, I have some different iterations of the deck. I've played it in I think it was in Old Extended, in Extended. It existed there, I think, yeah. So I've played it there, and then, played it at some local events. But really, there was a friend of mine, Dominic Gertsen, brother of Simon Gertsen, was on the Pro Tour, and he played the Nazim deck at the Pro Tour, and he really helped me a lot with preparing and understanding the matchups in the deck. And I was fortunate to have him around and give me some advice. Yeah, and then I mean, there's not a lot of time left. What I usually do to practice, I just use a program called Cockatrice that lets you play against friends, and it just lets you play games really quickly instead of Magic Online. Yeah. I'm allowed to say that.
No, it's fine. Like, we use that in the Prodigy group as well. So yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah, this just saves you a lot of time. So that's what I use most of the time to prepare.
So sounds like the key, at least in this particular case, was kind of recognizing the field, the meta, what was going on. Like, you saw this new Nahiri deck. Okay, people are going to pick up on that. So, things are going to slow down. And then you kind of recognize the Eldrazi deck wasn't good against combo. So that's really cool. Like, going through that.
Yeah, they weren't prepared to interact with what that combo deck was doing. They weren't really prepared to interact.
So that process, how did you do that? Like, is that just something you developed over time? Because I think that's a really good skill, like being able to look at the meta and kind of figuring that stuff out. Do you have any insights onto how to evaluate the meta like that?
Yeah, I just read a lot of content on different sites and what people are writing about right now, and then you kind of get a feel for it, what people are excited about, and people usually want to try out the new cards and the new decks, and if people are excited about the new Nahiri deck, then you never know for sure, but you sort of get a feeling for it that this might be popular. And you can also at the GP, you can also wander around the hall and see what people are buying from the dealers, you know, or what's sold out, what cards are sold out. So you that also helps sometimes. You get if certain cards are sold out, then you might give you some more information. But other than that, you just look at what's happening on Magic Online, what decks are picking up in popularity. I use MTG Goldfish, for example, to just look at the metagame shares of certain decks and how these are changing. And then, that helps with getting a feel for the direction the format's headed.
Yeah, and so then how did you know that Ad Nauseam was a good, like, answer, I guess? So how did you know that Nahiri didn't react well with combo?
Well, I look at the deck lists, and then I kind of just theorize about it, and do it in my head, or I just you just look at the cards and how they might interact, and what the Nahiri deck will have problems with, or what other decks are trying to beat right now. I mean, a deck like Jund, it can adapt to the decks it's trying to beat. So you just look at how the decks are currently set up, what decks they're trying to beat, and sometimes they're trying to beat creature decks or spell based decks, and it's the Nahiri deck was kind of a slow deck. It had some permission, but the beautiful thing is that the Nautium deck can play at instant speed. It can win at instant speed. So they are always the ones who have to react. They can never play their Nahiri because it's a sorcery speed threat that costs 4 mana. If they play it, they might just lose the game on the spot. So,
got it.
That's
what you're looking at. You're looking at how many counter spells these decks have, and then
they didn't have many, and the ones they had, they didn't help that much. The Omnisium deck, it has three Pact of Negation, possibly 4 or some in the sideboard, and that's just a force of will. So even if they have counter spells, it's really, really hard for them to prevent you from comboing off, and they give you a lot of time. Yeah. You're more scared of the... Also, yes, one other important factor was that the Infect deck, one of the worst matchups for Nauseam, was not that great against the Nahiri deck, the Jeskai deck, because they still have cheap interaction for creature decks. They can kill creatures quite easily. Lightning Bolt and Path to Exile. Yeah, so there were some decks that I expected to fade out a bit because of the Jeskai deck. And if these decks that I expect to be less popular are bad matchups for the deck, I'm going to play it, and that makes my choice even better.
Right. Yeah. I love that. So you're looking at, you said MTG Goldfish, and you're using the resources that are out there, and you're kind of seeing what's going on in the format. In this particular case, it was Modern. So what decks are doing well, and what decks are becoming popular? So, and you said, keep in mind that people want to play with new cards. They also want to play with, the popular cards, the popular decks, rather. So you see, okay, this deck is coming up. That means that people are going to want to test it out. They're going to want to be seeing it more. Obviously, not everyone's going to play that, so you have to worry about other stuff. But then, because this deck is doing well, that means that this other deck, in this case, Infect, will probably be less represented, and because that's less represented, then Ad Nauseam will have a better chance, and Ad Nauseam also answers this popular deck pretty well because they don't have a lot of permission, and so that's kind of how you kind of figure out what's well positioned and take a look at what's going on now.
Exactly. That's what I was trying to do. It doesn't always work out, and especially in Modern, it's more difficult. In Standard, it's even easier in Standard, or it will work more often in Standard. In Modern, you might just face some random matchups. There's too many decks, but still, these were the thoughts that were going through my head. Yeah.
Mm. Yep. Love it. So to get where you are, you've obviously played, thousands of games against hundreds of people and just seen a lot and learned a lot. And so we want to ask you, what's the biggest mistake that you see players make? And then how can we avoid that mistake?
Yeah, I think it's similar to what I've already mentioned, in that you arrive at the point where you think you're good enough, and you've seen it all, and you're just really good at Magic. You think, and that just prevents you from getting better at the game, I think. And I see a lot of players, or you might just not be that open for advice anymore if you believe that you're good enough at the game at a certain point.
So how do we avoid that? How do we not get stuck in that trap?
Yeah, you just have to realize that there's just so much still to learn for you about the game, and you should always try to learn from others and try to learn from players who are more experienced than you, and you'll never be... You say never just think that you've seen it all. That just be open for input from other players, and try to improve your game. Yeah.
So turning that focus inward on you, what's the deepest thing that you've learned about yourself from playing Magic?
I think that if you work really hard at something, that if you put in the time, that If you just don't give up, you can eventually achieve a goal you've set for yourself, and that I can be quite persistent. that I can just keep going until I've reached the goal I've set.
I love it. If you don't give up, you can achieve your goals.
Exactly. I just keep going. Just keep trying. Even if you fail, then back up and just keep.
Yeah.
Keep doing it, yes.
So on that note, what are some of your shortcomings as a Magic player? Like, what are you working on right now that you notice in yourself?
Right. Yeah, I think in Constructed, I'm okay at choosing decks for tournaments, but I'm not good at is designing new decks, completely new decks, new strategies. That's really, really hard to do. There's only a few people who are good at it. I think you need to be great. I mean, there's some great deck builders out there, and I'm just not a great deck builder. It's really hard. I'm much better at limited, because in limited you have to draft your deck and you have to build a sealed deck, but it's different. It's just not the same. I can build a sealed deck, and I cannot build a new constructed deck. It's something completely different. You have to build a new deck for a metagame, then it's something I'm not yet good enough at. And I can take an existing deck, I can make some changes to it, I can make it better, but that's still on a completely different level than building a new deck. Especially for Pro Tours, yeah, I mean, you have a new set of cards and you have all these new cards to build new decks. It's something I'm having a lot of problems with. Yeah. It's really hard.
Yeah, the deck building, it's like you said, like there are some people that are just really good and great at it. I'm definitely not one of those as well. And so I'm more of a, I'm there with you where, you know, I like to take a deck that's already there and tweak it a little bit. And I'm even working on that skill. So, that's good that you recognize something that you can, you know, improve on. If you could go back in time, let's say 5 years, and knowing what you know now, give yourself advice, what would you say? What advice would you give yourself?
Well, that I should maybe just be patient. especially regarding the trying to debate a Grand Prix, I think I was trying to force it a bit too much, or just that didn't help with actually making it. That when I was close, I was just thinking about finally making it instead of just taking it match by match, round by round. I should have not wasted too much time thinking about finally getting there, and instead just focused on what I was doing right then, and just be relaxed and patient about it, even if it didn't work out in the end. And then sometimes I maybe wanted it too much, and then was disappointed when it didn't work out, and that didn't help the whole course of making it. Yeah, so just not think too much about the end result. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we have definitely learned a ton from you, and I really appreciate the insights that you shared. So we're pulling into the home stretch here. I want to say you mentioned that you're really good at limited. Is that your best or your favorite format?
Limited in general is what I prefer over constructed, and boosted draft is my fair mid format. I'm mostly draft on Magic Online.
So have you drafted a lot of this set, Kaladesh?
Yes, okay, I have. Cool, I have. Cool. Not as much as some other sets, but obviously drafted quite a bit for the Pro Tour and for the GPs.
So give us a good tip for Kaladesh. Like, what's something, let's say a fairly new Kaladesh drafter, what's one thing that they should focus on to kind of, you know, get their feet wet?
Mm-hmm. I think you want to be, if in doubt, then you want to be aggressive in Kaladesh. You want to draft a low to the ground aggressive deck with a low curve. But there are other decks. But if you're new to the format, then it's better to be aggressive. Take some of the aggressive vehicles. These are great, and just draft a low curve aggressive deck, preferably with combat tricks. Yeah, just don't try to go for a fancy energy deck or multicolor deck. These are there, they exist, but if you're new to the format, it's probably better to stick with an aggressive deck.
And what is an underplayed card in Kaladesh right now? It doesn't have to be, you know, I'm not going to hold you to the fire and be like, oh, you said it was going to be good and it's not. But just what card do you think is not getting enough respect?
Single card. I think maybe all of the modules, the energy modules, these are great. And I think people are starting to understand or already have. But in the beginning, I would always get these really, really late in drafts. I really like them as a card because they give you a late game, they give you a mana sink, and there aren't that many mana sinks in the format and late game cards. And yeah, sometimes they're too slow for draft, but if you have a deck that's built around these the modules, then you can they can be really, really powerful. Yeah,
I'm in a sealed league right now, and one of my opponents had two of them, and oh man. Yeah. And so it's like, you know, whenever he plays a creature, he gets an, what is it? Whenever he plays a creature, he gets an energy. Whenever he gets an energy, he gets a +1/+1 counter. I'm like, this is bad. And then he had, the one creature that, when you play it, you can return any other permanent to your hand. It's the white creature.
Right. The white.
Yeah.
Drop?
Yeah.
Right.
And he had two of them. So he was able to play one, return the other, play one, return the other. So he's constantly like making energy and getting +1/+1 tokens. Oh, I was like, this is not good. This is not good at all.
That sounds sweet, but it sounds sweet. Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. That's great. Yeah.
So you mentioned some of your Magic related resources. You said MTG Goldfish is where you go to kind of look at. Are there any other? Oh, and obviously blackborder.com. We're going to link to that in the show notes for sure. Do you have any other Magic related resources that you turn to?
Well, I mean, obviously the big strategy sites with videos and articles. Other than that, it's mostly Goldfish. Yeah, for deck lists even, and just Cockatrice to play games.
And lastly, where are we going to see you in the future? What events do you have coming up? We love cheering on past guests, so tell us where we can see you.
I'm currently in Rotterdam. I was here for the team GP, Team Grand Prix, and then the following weekend, there's going to be the World Magic Cup, where I'll be playing for Switzerland. Yeah, I'm the national team as the team captain, so that's starting this Friday.
Yeah. I mean, this episode will go up after that event. But, man, we wish you luck. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah. And then it will be GP Madrid. But right now, we're preparing for the World Magic Cup.
Look at you. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us, even though you're preparing for a big event. That's awesome. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. You're welcome.
So, Prodigies out there, once again, if you want to connect with Andreas, the best place to do that is on Facebook, Andreas Gantz. You can find him there. And Andreas, what is one last parting piece of guidance? Either something that you already said you want to emphasize, or something new you want to leave with us here at the end?
I think for players, just make sure you enjoy the game. And if you feel like there's a time where you don't enjoy the game, maybe take a small break and then come back to the game refreshed. And when you feel that you're having fun, I think that's the most important thing. Yeah, just have fun playing the games. It will be much better, much easier. Keep doing what you love to do. Yeah, if you enjoy the game, then just keep playing.
Well, Andreas, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. And thank you so much for your time and for sharing your experiences with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it has been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed, always draw what you need, and depart every plane victorious.
Thanks, man. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Yeah, appreciate that. Thanks for having me.
There you have it. Thank you so much, Andreas, for coming on to the show. I learned a lot. Prodigies, I hope you did as well. As always, you can find the show notes at mtgprotutor.com/AndreasGantz. I should stop being surprised by how much I learn each and every episode. It's just so neat to hear these great players share their thoughts and experiences, and I'm always taking notes and learning something here and there in every episode. It's just so fun. So I really hope that you're getting the same value out of this as I am, for sure. If you are getting value out of the show, there are a few things I'd like to invite you to do. First, the easiest and lowest impact to you, but big impact for the show, is sharing it with a friend. I would love to get the word out there. I would love for MTG Pro Tutor to grow to a brand where players just know, hey, if I make top 8 of a Grand Prix, I'm going to get invited onto the show. They know the show. They know what it is. They know that their invitation is coming. I would also love to help 1,000 players qualify for the Pro Tour. And the way that we can do that is by getting the word out there, by helping other people find the show and improve their game. We can achieve both those goals. Another way you can support the show is by leaving a rating and review on iTunes. If you have not done that yet, it just takes a few minutes. mtgpro2.com/iTunes will redirect you to the iTunes page, and then you can open up the iTunes store from there and leave a rating and review. They really help the show be found. They help spread the word. I do read each and every one, and I'm so grateful when they come in. So thank you for those who have done it, and thank you for those who will do it. And then the last way that you can support the show directly is through the Patreon. mtgpro2.com/Patreon is where you can go for that. Get more information. You can pledge any amount you want per episode. It may not feel like a lot, you know, $1 here, $1 there, but believe me, it does add up. And because of the patrons that the show does have, I'm able to hire out the editing. And right now I'm looking for a new show notes person. And that would not be possible without the generous contributions from the patrons. So thank you, thank you, thank you. That's really it for the post-interview stuff. I really enjoyed joining you today, being in your earballs. And I hope that for those of you who are in the States celebrating Thanksgiving, that you had a great time with family and friends and found many things to be thankful for. As I mentioned, I am thankful for technology. I'm thankful for my family. And I'm thankful for you. Thank you so much, Prodigies, for tuning in and listening. I look forward to joining you again next week. Until then, I am Sean of The Gathering, and we'll see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.